The Factory Podcast from Bright & Associates, presented by Jim Bright.
Hello and welcome to another Factory Podcast. My name is Jim Bright, and in this podcast I'm going to introduce myself, talking last year in Hobart on December the 1st, 2006, at the Pathways 8 conference. I was giving a keynote entitled From Probabilities to Possibilities, the Application of Chaos Theory in Career Development. And for the next 55 minutes or so, you'll hear an outline of the chaos theory of careers that I co-authored with my colleague Professor Robert Pryor, and how it can be applied to self-limited thinking and career counselling. One of the features of the chaos theory of careers is that it integrates unplanned events into the centre of the career planning process. And if you listen out right to the end of the podcast, you will hear an unplanned event that befell me right at the end of the keynote presentation. So, it's over to me in Hobart in December 2006 for From Probabilities, Possibilities.
The keynote presenter today is a guy who's a man after my own heart. He's a sailor. He's got a 33-footer on Pittwater. Like the other presenters, he's got two dogs, but this time they're two Welsh Springer Spaniels. And he took one of our later presenters, or later workshop presenters, Peter Tatham, sailing on Sydney Harbour, and something about dodging seagulls, but we'll get to hear about that later on. Professor Jim Bright is a Professor of Career Education and Development at the Australian Catholic University in New South Wales and a partner in Bright & Associates. Over 15 years of international consulting experience, specialising in careers and training, and Jim works with individuals and organisations assisting both with transition processes from training to career. And he's published 9 books, together with over 125 peer-reviewed scientific journal articles, most in leading international journals. Jim is a fellow of the Australian Psychological Society, a professional member of the Australian Association of Carers, Careers Counsellors, a member of the National Career Development Association, the British Psychological Society, the International Association for Educational and Vocational Guidance, and is a chartered psychologist. Jim will argue that thinking about vocational capacity for people with disability too often emphasises the probability of limitation and rarely considers the possibility of potential, and that perhaps one answer lies with the chaos theory of careers. What's that, you might ask? Well, let's find out what is not probable, but what is possible. Would you please give a warm welcome to Professor Jim Bright?
Thank you. I don't know why you're applauding, because I haven't said anything yet, and you might want to withdraw those applause as I begin to talk. I think on this day, the first day of summer, it's very important that I make a public announcement. Despite what my accent might sound like, I am a naturalised Australian who barracks for Australia in the cricket as well as the rugby. So, and to ingratiate myself further, myself and my wife, who's First Fleet on both sides of her family, had our honeymoon starting off in Hobart and moving around Tasmania. So, and she's still my wife, so there you go. That's my way of ingratiating myself. I'm going to talk about a theory of careers and career development that myself and my colleague, Professor Robert Pryor, from the Australian Catholic University, have been working on for the last 5 or 6 years, and also inspired by many other thinkers around the world, such as Mark Savickas, Norman Amundsen, Debbie Block, and in Australia, Wendy Patton and Mary McMahon, amongst others, saying that we're dissatisfied with the typical approaches towards career development. I don't know if any of you have ever experienced a vocational interests test, where you type into a computer or you answer a whole series of questions saying, do you like working with tractors or helping people? And an hour later, you get the results and it says, you should be a shepherd. And you're thinking, how do we get from here to here? And that's not a very good option, because you just can't get the staff these days. So, look, I know it was a good dinner, and it was late, and I can wait. So that, I guess there's a sense that that kind of approach towards career planning and transition supposes the world is a very stable, unchanging place, and we can predict fairly accurately where people end up. And I want to challenge those kinds of notions and perhaps suggest a different sort of approach towards helping people with transitions that perhaps moves away from the probable and focuses a bit more on the possible. And to make that point, imagine that I've got no friends. Shouldn't be too hard. And I'm bored, and I'm in a room, and I'm on my own. Now, what do you do if you're bored in a room on your own with no friends? Well, obviously, you pull your ping pong ball out of your pocket, don't you? That's the most logical thing to do. And you hold your ping pong ball at about waist height. And then you drop it. Whereabouts does the ball initially land? Below my hand. Somewhere kind of near me, not near you. Yeah? You're all reasonably confident. Now, you may have heard I have a psychological training and background. And I can see this audience is going to be hard to convince. We call it anally retentive in the biz. So I think, okay, that demonstration hasn't convinced you, so I'm going to spend the rest of the afternoon repeatedly dropping ping pong balls from about waist height to convince myself that it will, I have a really exciting life, that it will land roughly near my feet. What you've got there is almost a perfectly predictable system. Would you put a bet on? The ball's going to land somewhere under my hand, near my feet? Yeah. I think most of you probably would. I don't think anyone will put a bet on with me. I look far too shifty for that. Now, imagine into this room we introduce a playful puppy who likes nothing more than playing with ping pong balls. When I drop the ball now, are you more or less confident about where it's going to land? Less. Now we have a litter of playful puppies that like nothing more than playing with ping pong balls. Are you more or less confident about where the ball's going to land? Now some sadist has obliged me. They've taken one look at me and put me on a treadmill. But they programmed it on random. And there's two large oscillating fans put into the room as well. And these puppies. Where's the ball going to land? Anyone want to put a bet on? We've gone from a perfectly predictable system, the ball dropping from my hand. All we've done is introduce some pesky little critters along with the treadmill and a couple of fans, and you've gone from perfectly predictable to all bets are off. Three or four influences. How many influences are there on people's careers? Not countable. More than three or four? So give up with prediction. Forget about prediction. It's not the way to go forward. Careers are far too complex. You are far too complex as an individual. The world is far too complex. And there's a nice theory that makes this point rather well. And it's made this in mathematics and biology. And that's the chaos theory. And what we've done is just pinch that theory and apply it to careers, because we think it actually is quite a helpful way of thinking about people and their careers and thinking about how you can help people in their careers. The chaos theory of careers says that people are complex and they're dynamical. They're living, moving, breathing things. And because of that complexity, and because they're comprised of lots of different systems, their cardiovascular system, their nervous system, their social system, all of those systems and all of that complexity. Because we have all of these things, it's actually very difficult to make predictions. It's very difficult to see what's going to happen in the future with total certainty. And maybe what we should be doing is moving away from this notion that everything is unchanging and certain to instead embracing very positively a notion of positive uncertainty. There's another element in the chaos theory of careers that's important. And to illustrate that, let me just introduce a few characters. And the first one is poor old Nanette Meach. Nanette Meach was a Canadian who loved to do nothing more in her spare time than to go canoeing. And on one day, Nanette Meach was canoeing down the river when a tree fell on her and killed her. Because the night before, a beaver had been gnawing away at the tree. And poor old Nanette Meach just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. This was a significant unplanned event in the career of Nanette Meach. Well, that's compassionate, isn't it? This is a bit tittering. God, blimey. Maybe you prefer the example of the worst animal rescue. I don't make up my examples. Let's go back to 1978 in a dim and dreary country in the Northern Hemisphere called the United Kingdom. And there was a strike, an industrial strike, and the British Army had taken over the emergency firefighting when they received a call from the proverbial little old lady. This little old lady wanted her cat retrieved that was stuck up a tree. The army turned up with their green goddess fire machines, and with spectacular military efficiency, they retrieved the poor Moggy from the tree and reunited the cat with its delighted owner. And the delighted owner, so overcome with emotion, invited the fireys in for a cup of tea to say thank you, which they duly accepted. And after a very pleasant few moments with the tea, they bade her farewell and drove over the cat in the driveway. It's an ex-cat, it ceased to be. This was an unplanned moment in the careers of those fireys, the old lady, and perhaps most importantly, the cat as well. If that's not your taste, maybe the worst hijacking took place in 1976 when a hijacker jumped up on a flight in America, took the stewardess hostage and said, "Take me to Detroit." To which the stewardess replied, "We're already going to Detroit." At which point, the hijacker sat down and said, "Oh, good." The worst bank robbery happened in Rothesay in Britain in 1975 at the Trustees Savings Bank. And this was in the days before security screens were widespread, separating the staff from the customers. This well-planned robbery by the three assailants went splendidly until they arrived at the bank and hadn't figured on the revolving doors that the bank had recently installed. All three assailants contrived to get themselves stuck in those revolving doors on their way into the bank. But luckily for them, they hadn't at that stage revealed their intentions. And after a very helpful security guard freed them, they sheepishly went on their way, thanking the guards profusely for their help. Undeterred, 15 minutes later, they make their return. This time, successfully navigating those pesky revolving doors. "It's a stick-up," said the lead robber, to which the staff roared with laughter, assuming this was a practical joke. Nobody could possibly be this stupid. Now, if you're a robber and people don't take you seriously, this is a bit of an affront to your professional competence, I would say. And certainly this was an affront to this individual who decided that he'd take matters into his own hands by leaping over the counter to reinforce the seriousness of his intent. Anyway, as he was writhing around on the floor with a broken ankle, having landed heavily, the other two assailants decided the game was up and made good their exit, where for a second time in one day they contrived to get stuck in the revolving doors, and all three were apprehended. This was not what was planned by the robbers, or perhaps even the designer of the revolving doors. More recently, in New South Wales, these attractive-looking individuals contrived to have the most unsuccessful escape from a correctional centre. Having got out of the building, they flagged down a car to make good their escape and managed to flag down an unmarked police car. And they were immediately returned from whence they'd come. But you're thinking, you know, this is stuff that happens on the mainland. We don't have unplanned events in Tasmania. We don't have unplanned events in Hobart. This is a man that might be known to some of you. His name is Peter Tatham. He's the president of the Career Industry Council of Australia. Very important, intelligent man, very influential man. And he's also a resident in God's Own Island, and he's sitting just there. And in a conversation we were having last night while you were enjoying your conference dinner and talking about matters of grave concern of state and standards in careers and tactics and policy, Peter was saying, I think we should be cautious. And the words didn't come out as a seagull with perfect aim and timing provided Peter with feedback on his latest policy initiative. This was an unplanned moment, and myself and Peter both think this could be a signal and a sign. So, sorry, Peter, but I just couldn't resist. What I've covered there are some of the key features of chaos theory. Randomness and complexity of influence. There are also other very important key features. And one of these is non-linearity. Non-linearity refers to a situation where a small or perhaps even insignificant event can lead to a profound outcome. In one sense, non-linearity was in that story of Nanette Meach. A beaver gnawing away at a tree, as a beaver does, led to a profound event in Nanette Meach's life and changed the course of the lives of her loved ones, no doubt, as well. If you have seen the movie Sliding Doors, you might be aware of the story of the woman who is running to get on a tube train in London. And they show two scenarios. In one scenario, she runs to get on the train, and the doors just slide in front of her because she's too late. And the train goes without her. And her life takes a particular course. In the other scenario, the doors just slide behind her. She's 2 seconds earlier. And the doors just slide behind her, and she gets on that train, and her life takes a different course. But this is not just the movies. If we go back to the 7th of July last year in London, the London tube bombing, there were eyewitnesses saying things like, if I hadn't stopped to give a tourist directions, if I hadn't stopped to buy a newspaper, I would have been in that carriage. Their lives would have been changed dramatically. I had a client in a medical legal matter some years ago who used to work in the middle of a CBD of a major city, and she'd each day walk from the bus stop to work and walk back. And she did this the same every day, routine. And on this particular day, she put one step in front of the other and was collected by a bus. She was significantly disfigured. She became depressed and withdrawn. She tried to validate her looks by engaging in casual sex. Her boyfriend left her. The casual sex led to drug use. Her family disowned her. She went from having a job to doing something she's done every day for 5 years, putting one foot in front of the other. But on this occasion, the confluence of influences led to a dramatically different outcome for her. And in chaos theory, we call that a phase shift. When your system is configured and you're going along in one course, and then suddenly something happens, totally out of the blue, and you're put off into a completely different course. I don't think I need to tell an audience like this how that kind of concept might be relevant. That notion is a phase shift. The classic example in chaos theory is pouring sand onto a beach. So imagine you're with me in Sydney, we're on a beach, we've avoided the riots, we're at the other end of the beach, and we're pouring the sand onto the beach. We end up getting like a pyramid of sand as we pour it. Yeah? There might be a billion grains of sand, each one falling into a discernible shape of a pyramid. And then at some point that we cannot predict, we add the billionth and oneth bit of sand, and we have an avalanche. And you end up with a little row of pyramids. Notice, something that has happened a billion times before, on this occasion, some subtle difference in the system and the configuration of the system leads to a major reconfiguration of the shape and structure of the system. And that's a chaos kind of notion. Those unplanned events that I referred to are not just random acts which happen to the unfortunate few. In the research that myself and my colleagues have done recently with a large sample of young Australians, 80% on average said that an unplanned event had significantly influenced their career. If you're interested, that's in the International Journal of Education and Vocational Guidance. I'm happy to send papers to people if you want them later. We've replicated that finding, and in our work with young Australians, average age about 20, about 70 to 80% report that an unplanned event has significantly influenced their career. In that sample, about 10% report that an accident or illness has significantly influenced their career. And that figure, unfortunately, will grow as we go through life and get exposed to more illnesses and accidents. In other words, unplanned events are ubiquitous. And in fact, perhaps the only thing that we can predict with any certainty is that there is uncertainty. My colleague at Stanford University, Professor John Krumbholz, and his colleague, Kathleen Mitchell, talks about planned happenstance and wrote a paper called Serendipity is Serendipitous, and then wrote a self-help book with Al Levin called Luck is No Accident. So career thinkers around the world are thinking, okay, this luck stuff that we've normally just kind of ignored, let's pretend it doesn't exist, let's work on the stable, let's pretend this chance event stuff doesn't happen. Let's treat the chance event a bit like the sort of black sheep drunken uncle tottering down the driveway on Christmas Day and everyone pretending they don't exist and disowning them. In fact, we have to deal with chance events because they're inherent in the system. And in chaos theory, they're inherent in the system. We have stability, but the opposite side of the coin of stability is instability. And the notion of being on the edge of chaos, the edge of dramatic change, is in fact where many of us are. And in fact, we would argue if you want to have creativity and renewal, you need to be on the edge of chaos. But unfortunately, we don't like uncertainty. It scares us. How do you respond? How do you plan to respond to uncertainty? This is why terrorism is terrifying, because we cannot plan or predict it. I'll give you a tip. If you're going to go into the careers advising business, specializing in advising budding terrorists, don't say to the terrorist, always wear a big red hat and let the authorities know where you are at all times, because they won't be very successful. It's that notion of not being able to control it or predict it which scares us. The biggest predictor of occupational stress is a perception of control over our circumstances. We need this sense of control. But the world is not like that. And this leads us to self-limited thinking, where we kid ourselves that the world is more predictable and controllable than it really is. And one example of this, and this is where the chaos theory originally came from, is meteorology. Trying to predict the weather. The weather system is chaotic. It's a chaos system. And the mathematical equations of chaos originally were developed in this field to try and predict weather patterns. Now, we can predict what the weather's going to be like today, especially if you're in Melbourne, because you get every form of weather in one day, so it's easy. But trying to predict what the weather's going to be like next month, that's getting a bit harder. That's like you've just added the puppies into the room. Trying to predict what the weather's going to be like on this day next year, your guess is as good as the best meteorologist's. Okay? It becomes too hard because there are too many influences, and sometimes those influences are incredibly subtle. For instance, if the ocean temperature of South America rises by a degree, farmers in New South Wales and other parts of Australia lose their jobs through drought. We're aware of those things. When terrorists fly into a building in New York, pilots from Air New Zealand are made redundant. When a monkey gets sick in China with SARS, Aboriginal tourist groups at Uluru go out of business. When a bird gets the snivels and a bit of flu in Turkey, the stock exchanges around Europe crash. We see these effects all of the time. And the founding sort of father of chaos theory, Edward Lorenz, said in 1972, "Does the flap of a butterfly's wings in Brazil set off a tornado in Texas?" It's the butterfly effect. And in fact, there are movies now called The Butterfly Effect. It's come into popular parlance. We're seeing it more and more and more, that unpredictable and small events are intimately interconnected with lots of other things and can lead to great levels of uncertainty. So we're moving from a situation where we say to people, okay, what do you want to be in 5 years' time? I think that kind of approach to careers may have been helpful once, but it isn't now. And I rather like the philosophy of the actor Peter Ustinov, who said on his 75th birthday, "I really must decide what to do with my life." And I think that's the philosophy that we want to get across to people. This notion that everything has got to be absolutely planful is a bizarre thing. Personally, I blame the parents. And I put myself in that group as well. Because something mysterious happens between about the age of 20, when we all sit around with President Clinton smoking but not inhaling, of course, and then about the age of 38 or 40, when we become deeply conservative about our children's futures. And while it was okay for us not to be sure what we're going to do or make it up as we go along or respond to circumstances as they evolve and change, nope, our kids are going to have it all mapped out because we don't want them to make the mistakes that we made. It's a very natural, loving thing. We want to protect them and cushion them from the world. But of course we can't. Because as that great careers advisor John Lennon said, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. Or if you prefer your examples in a more militaristic form, the American general Dwight Eisenhower said, "In battle, plans are useless, but planning is indispensable." And that's kind of the notion that we want to capture. Don't just have a plan, and then that's it, my life is going to be this, but rather invent new plans every day, every minute, every second, because from one second to the next, there could be a profound change. The future in the chaos theory of careers is your next breath or heartbeat, should you be so lucky to reach them. That's the future, because that's all it takes to profoundly change the world. A few years ago, I was fortunate enough to be talking about this in Florida. Do you remember the hanging chads? The vote cards which weren't fully punched out, and the legal battles that went on to determine the presidency of the United States, which in a very fair and open process was awarded to George Bush by George Bush's brother. Anyway, a few hundred hanging chads in Florida changed the course of world history. When you start thinking like this, and I'm playing with your minds, ladies and gentlemen, you start seeing these patterns everywhere. You start seeing chaos alive everywhere, and you start seeing chaos in careers. So how do we deal with those situations, and what are some of the issues in relation to this? Well, one notion in chaos theory that's particularly useful is the notion of attractors. And attractors are ways of controlling or constraining or defining a living system, a moving system. And the first attractor is called the point attractor. And the point attractor is a bit like this ball and gravity. Gravity, or the floor, acts as a point attractor for this ball. Every time I drop it, it's going to go down to the floor. In a point attractor, everything in the moving system ends up in one place. It's like water going down a plug hole, whichever hemisphere you happen to be in. It's like a marble being thrown around a steel bowl, eventually comes to rest at the bottom of that bowl. They're all examples of point attractors. In careers, a classic example of that is goal setting. The second one is the pendulum attractor. And this one is a bit like two point attractors, that the system can swing between two different positions. Beasley Rudd, for instance. The Taurus attractor is close to my heart because it looks like a donut. But it's also probably the most dangerous one. And I'll come to the reasons why in a second. In this one, things move around. And the last one there is called the strange attractor, and this is the chaos attractor. I don't know if you agree with me, that looks like wallpaper in an Indian restaurant at about 2 o'clock in the morning, or is that just me? In this world of attractors, those first four attractors, the point, periodic, and torus, are closed systems. The ball and gravity is a closed system. There's only a ball and gravity. That's all there is. There's nothing else can come into it. And you notice what I did sneakily? By adding the puppies and the treadmill, I started to make the system more and more open. I could have gone on and opened the window in the room and had a howling gale blowing outside. Now, suddenly, things outside of the system can unpredictably influence things within. And if one of those pesky puppies decided not to give me the ball back and jumped out the window, if I wanted to carry on playing with my ping pong ball, I'd be obliged to leave the room and go running after that pesky puppy to retrieve the ball. And if I did, the whole game has changed from me standing there on this treadmill dropping the ball to my cardiovascular system versus the puppies. I know which one I'd put the money on. The treadmill's no longer important. The fans are irrelevant. The other puppies are irrelevant. It's all about who can run the fastest now. That's a phase shift. It's like the sand shifting in an avalanche. That's an open system. And chaotic systems are open systems. We as human beings are open systems. We are influenced by lots of things around us. You might think it's a nauseating prospect, but we have air conditioning in here. We're sharing the same air. All of this hot air that I'm spouting, you are ingesting. What a nausea thought that is for you. We are open systems. We are actually in connection and communion as we speak. The point attractor is like goal setting. In careers, what are your goals? What do you want to be? But life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. And it's all very well pushing goals, but goals aren't actually that effective in terms of motivation. And the best example I can think of, the best naturalistic experiment I can think of about the effectiveness of goals is dieting. Yeah. Failure rates for diets? Anyone want to? About 95% of people who go on diets in the medium to long term either fail to lose weight or put weight on. If goal setting is such an effective way of motivating and changing behavior, how do you account for that abysmal failure rate? And the point is, when we see examples of successful goal setting, we typically get put forward sportsmen and women. These are often the ones presented. But it overlooks a couple of critical points. One is most of those people have absurd natural talent for the particular activity they engage in. And the second point is, in the modern day world, these people are usually cocooned from the world, almost like a closed system, by a coterie of coaches, masseurs, managers and others who stop them from being influenced by these unplanned events. And even then, it doesn't stop Glenn McGrath standing on a ball, doing his ankle and losing the Ashes. Even then, unplanned events insinuate their ways into their lives. Goal setting is not as successful as people make it out. I don't say you should abandon goals. Goals can be good, but generally in the shorter term. And it's not the only approach. The other issue with goal setting is you're so focused on the goal, you miss other opportunities along the way. And what if you achieve your goal and find it actually doesn't lead to satisfaction? In Sydney, people go through 5 divorces and 7 fraud trials to get a house by the harbour. And then the smug next door neighbour comes along and says, but you're the wrong side of the bridge. And they shoot people. Materialism is a classic example of imprinting on the wrong goal and finding it doesn't lead to happiness. I'm not sure whether it was the great careers advisor John Lennon or the other one, Paul McCartney, who says money can't buy you love. Not sure. The goal of money is a poor one. The second one, the pendulum attractor, Beasley Rudd, or I'm going to leave this job, I hate this job. If he says that to me once more, I'm going to quit. But the superannuation's quite good, and it's a regular pay, and actually I've got some nice friends, and I might not be able to hack it in another job. I think I'll stay. If he says that again, I hate his jokes, I'm getting sick of this, I'm going to go. Should I stay or should I go? Is an example of the pendulum attractor. Black and white thinking, seeing things as either this or this. The world is not black and white. The world is full of shades of grey and colour and variety. You can't simplify those things. Yes, in the short term you can do that. You stand outside the cinema, should I see the Arnie movie or should I see the Woody Allen movie? Yep, well that's a black and white decision. You can make a decision. But in the long term you can't run your life like that. The world is more complex. You can't simplify the world down to those black and white things. The tourist attractor is the most dangerous because it looks a bit like the real world, but it isn't. This is a place for everything and everything in its place. Have you ever come across someone who might live their lives along the lines of Monday it's egg and chips, Tuesday's fish and chips, Wednesday's steak and chips, Thursday's lasagna, Friday's fish, Saturday's salad, Sunday's roast, Monday's egg and chips. They routinize things to the point of tedium and boredom. Would you like to know what you're going to do with every second of your life until the end of your life? Or would that be literally a life sentence? Would that be a tedious, awful thing? Would you like to be told when you go to the cinema, you'll see the same movie? When you listen to the radio, you'll listen to the same programs. Time in, time out. No change, nothing new. We can't live like that. We need change. But people are scared of change, so they get themselves into this way of routinizing everything. Anyone who's worked in a large organization will know about the tyranny of policy. And policies don't cover everything. There's always exceptions to policies. I seem to get a particular kick out of finding exceptions to policies at times. They don't always work. No matter how much we try to find and predict and control, there'll always be exceptions. So what we're arguing is the world is really like that, the strange attractor. It is unpredictable. But in there are patterns. You can see there's a pattern in there. You might even attempt to try and describe it as tentacles or some squiggly thing or the Loch Ness Monster or whatever comes into your head. Or maybe that's what you're feeling after too many glasses of good Tasmanian Pinot last night. Who knows? But nonetheless, I'll take that off if it's causing people pain. In other words, in this system, there are emerging patterns. In the same way that people recognize who you are from day to day. People know that. But if you've ever had that experience of maybe waking up and looking in the mirror and saying, ooh, I've got old. Or is that just me? People still recognize you. You're self-similar, but you're not exactly the same. And that's what chaos theory says. It says that nothing ever repeats. Nothing ever repeats. Nothing ever repeats. And like clockwork, I always get the laugh on the third repetition, because your psychological response to me saying nothing ever repeats is subtly different on each occasion. And on the third occasion, it engendered some mild tittering amongst some of you. If I spend the rest of this presentation saying nothing other than nothing ever repeats, your response will move from sort of mild amusement to sort of homicidal tendencies. And that's the notion in chaos. And that's why, because nothing ever repeats, when you drop a grain of sand, it's a unique event. And with unique possibilities. People are unique individuals with unique possibilities from one moment to the next. And pigeonholing those people and narrowing those people down and labelling those people is not only offensive, it's unhelpful, and it doesn't reflect the realities of the world. But that's focusing on the probabilities, not the possibilities, in terms of careers. We have a thing called the counselling quadrant, which tries to pick up on this point, and we say it's got two sorts of qualities. People have two sorts of qualities. The convergent qualities, which are shared amongst other people. So things such as height and weight and hair colour and IQ and vocational interests or HSC score or UAI, these are things shared across, where you can compare across people. The convergent qualities. The emergent ones are the things that make you unique. The patterns that come out that make you all individuals. Say after me, yes, I am an individual. And those come from the moment-by-moment interactions you have with people, the chance meetings, the accidents, the illnesses, the genetic makeup of you, your abilities, the opportunities that are given to you. All of those things are the things that define you as an individual. The convergent ones might define you broadly as a human. The emergent ones are the ones that make you who you are. And they're the ones that we have not spent enough time on in career counselling in the past. Somebody who doesn't really know how they compare to other people and doesn't really know themselves may well have symptoms of being feeling completely lost in the world and maybe withdrawn and depressed in the counselling quadrant. People who know an awful lot about how they compare to other people but don't really understand themselves, that's the bottom left-hand quadrant, might feel stuck or frustrated or feel a bit like a headless chicken. They don't kind of know where they're going. They know they're very clever, but they don't know how to use that intelligence. They haven't really understood themselves. They don't know their story. They don't know what it is that really makes them tick and what makes them sick. If you go to the top right quadrant, people who are really understand who they are but have no idea about how they compare to other people might have totally unrealistic goals or thwarted ambition. So you might have a person with, an ambition to become a brain surgeon who simply hasn't got the intellectual firepower to make it to that position because they don't understand their convergent features. They understand themselves, but they don't understand how they fit into the world. And what we're saying is in the chaos theory, and the counseling quadrant shows this, you actually need to consider with your clients both their convergent qualities and their emergent ones. And the problem with just using sort of tests like vocational interests is they just look at the convergent and they don't allow the individual to tell their story and for the counsellor to work with the individual as an individual. You need both, not one or the other, but both. In terms of what you do, the quadrant suggests interest assessment and so forth to move people from low convergent to high convergent knowledge, or working on things such as stories, identifying dreams and patterns to move people from high emergent to high convergent knowledge. So what the counselling quadrant shows is a whole series of counselling skills. If you're interested, there is a version of this in Brighton Prior in the Journal of Employment Counselling. But again, if you contact me, I'm more than happy to send you a copy of the paper or the quadrant. So don't feel you've got to... I'm assuming people are writing down and just writing letters of complaint. Is that what you're doing? And this leads me on to the notion of probability and possibility. Because I think what happens is people who start thinking in terms of the goal attractor or the role attractor, the Taurus attractor, or routine attractor, are thinking in terms of closed systems. They're trying to make an open system, the world, a closed system. They're trying to lock themselves away psychologically and pretend that unplanned events aren't going to happen. And the goal in counselling is to move people from these closed systems to the open system of the strange attractor, an appreciation of the strange attractor. And I think that's where we need to take people. It means saying, imagine what could happen. Let's not worry about the probable, because the probable's probable because it's probable. Sorry. But if the probable's probable, by definition, there must be a possible, because you can't have probable without a possible, by definition. So if the probable's probably going to happen, let's spend less time worrying about that, and let's instead put more energy into, let's get the possible to become the probable. And how can we do that? We've known this for years, funnily enough. Those of you who might have used vocational interest tests to gauge people's interest in different occupations, one of the most famous ones is a series of yes-no questions to a whole series of activities and jobs. But on the front inside page, there's a section called Occupational Daydreams. And that's just a free response list where you can write down your wildest dreams about what you want to do. It turns out that what people write down there better predicts where they end up 3 years later than the yes-no stuff later on. We've actually known that for 30 years, or 29 years, touched and untouched in 1977. Known it for a long time. But we still focus on the probable. Because the wild dream stuff seems all a bit kind of namby-pamby, and you've got to go move to Nimbin to do that. You're not supposed to do that. It's all not quite right. It's not scientific. Shouldn't do it. But it works better. What in your wildest dreams could work? How could you develop a plan to make that dream come true? It means listening to your clients. It means listening to their stories and treating each individual as an individual work of art full of possibilities, full of potential. It's a very different kind of approach. We've developed some cards called Creative Thinking Strategy Cards. And these are little card sort you give to clients, and there's a card with a probability on it. What has happened to most people in the same situation, or what have I been told will happen? This is encouraging people to acknowledge the probability. Okay, let's do that, and let's put it to one side. And now let's show people the possibilities. Let's give them the possibility cards. Is anyone suggesting a different outcome? Could anyone else get a different outcome? Or what's the long shot? To encourage people to dare to dream. To encourage people to think beyond the restrictions of the point, pendulum, and torus attractors, and to engage in the strange attractor and move themselves to the edge of chaos where creativity can occur and new possibilities can emerge. We're moving from caution to courage. Caution to courage. In the top left-hand corner there, we have that beacon of public service, Sir Humphrey Appleby, from the Yes Minister television show. And of course, whenever the minister suggested something new and creative, what was Sir Humphrey's response? He would say, well, that would be very courageous, minister. And the term has almost become a euphemism for recklessness. A definition of a conservative is someone who believes nothing should be done even once. And Sir Humphrey is a classic example of that. And he's an example of probability thinking. Caution comes from the Latin cavere, meaning guard against. The notion is defensive. The notion is static. The notion is pushing things away. Holding your ground. It's very much the Taurus attractor. It's very much push everything, don't let anything into the system. Guard against anything new. That's what caution means. Courage is a much more hopeful word. It comes from the Latin for heart. Use your heart. Have courage. And that, of course, is what the lion in The Wizard of Oz was looking for. He wanted courage. And, of course, he had that courage. And the whole of that story is about him finding within himself that courage and looking within. And that's what counsellors can do. And my colleague, Norman Amundsen, has written a paper using the metaphor of the Wizard of Oz to point out how this can apply in career counselling and how that story applies in this area. So we need to move from probability to possibility and from caution to courage. To finish off, I want to give you a quote from an educationalist, William Arthur Ward. A true friend knows your weaknesses but shows you your strengths, feels your fears but fortifies your faith, sees your anxieties but frees your spirit, recognises your disabilities but emphasises your possibilities. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Questions or comments? We've got our roving mics. There's one there and the one over there. Any questions or a comment you'd like to pass on?
Feel free to throw money if you like, or credit cards.
Jim, I just want to say thank you for your talk this morning. My name's Shane McGuinness. I'm from the University of Melbourne. Just what you were saying about dreams and that kind of thing, for a student like myself looking to beyond university, it was great to hear that we really need to focus on what is possible and look ahead and dream, not just, you've got this disability so you can only go into this field or you can only do that. It's great to hear someone saying, look, still focus on your dreams and just take it as it comes. And I just wanted to say thank you because I really enjoyed it this morning.
Thank you very much. I think it's worth reflecting on what would the world of art be like if people didn't focus on the possibilities? Where would the great works of art be, the great plays, the great paintings, the great songs? Where are those things that make life worth living? Where are those magic moments in life come from recognizing the possibilities?
Write it down.
Just start from a bit in relay. Any other questions?
I come from the UK originally. And
I'm sorry.
I'm now an Australian citizen, so I'm pleased about that. But when I was in the UK, there wasn't much emphasis on goal setting. And when I came to Australia, there was a lot of emphasis on goal setting, and it sort of knocked me back a bit, and I wasn't prepared for it. How do you explain that?
I've never been asked that before, and I've never really come across a sort of cross-cultural difference in terms of goal setting. I can only speculate that if you had a cricket team like the English one, that you'd give up on in goals completely. That would be part of it. But more seriously, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you, I'm afraid. I've never confronted that kind of observation before. And I've been out of the UK a while now, so it would be difficult for me to comment on that one. But I'm intrigued. I shall follow that one up. I'm interested. Thank you for that comment.
Hello, I'm Val Chapman, and I'm from the UK as well.
Uh-oh, I'm trouble.
And I was just wondering, I'm thinking about mainly dyslexic students and about right brain versus left brain learners, and whether there's been any research that's been conducted into whether right brain learners are more likely to see the possibilities.
Well, I guess I don't mind the right brain, left brain thing as a metaphor for thinking about creativity and logic. Unfortunately, the neuropsychology, as I understand it, which is not great, I'm first to admit, suggests that, in fact, there's an awful lot of communication between the hemispheres in most things. Intriguingly, I'm left-handed, and apparently left-handers have less hemispheric specialization than right-handers. But so I think I don't mind talking about left brain, right brain in terms of a metaphor, but I think when it comes down to the neuropsychology or even learning, I'm a little bit skeptical about that kind of approach. So I don't mind talking about it as a metaphor, and I think there are things that you can do very early on in life to increase people's possibility thinking. And I'm a great believer in working with very young kids on careers. I mean, after all, you know, where are you going to get your chimney sweeps from? sorry. And increasingly, research is suggesting that kids are, from a very early age, ruling out things and focusing only on the probable. So by about the age of 9, they've given up on a whole load of things. The American by-adoption psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who works in the area of flow, that notion of flow being in the moment, the suggestion is that when you're reading a book and it's fantastic and the day just comes into night and you haven't realised time's gone by because you're so engrossed, that's a flow moment. Another one is to do with exercise, so I don't really understand it, but apparently when you're playing tennis and you're in a rally and the ball just seems like a football, probably means you're playing the wrong sport, but anyway, you're just so focused on the ball that you can't really take in anything else and you're playing really, really well. That's flow. By the age of 9, if you ask kids, and he has, about work, they say work is really important, but doesn't offer many opportunities for flow. Play is really good fun and it's full of flow, but it's not very important. And I think that's something we need to get past, this notion that work is a necessary evil, but instead see it as part of our spirit and part of fostering our social contribution, and it helps reinforce our social identity to some degree. So I think creative thinking strategies from an early age is the way to go on that one, which is probably a waffly answer to your question. That's an unplanned event, I think.
That's a fire bell. Just quietly move out to the foyer. Out to the outside, please. Use the exit. Open the doors. We'll come back later.
While you're here, let's take the opportunity now to really thank Jim for a terrific address this morning. Well done.
Can I say, this is, I think, the only time I've had a standing ovation.
That was me, Jim Bright, giving a keynote address in Hobart in December 2006 at the Pathways 8 conference. I hope you enjoyed that, and just for the record, the fire alarm was a false alarm, and everyone got out of the building safely, although probably with a headache, having had to listen to me for all of that time. Anyway, thank you for listening, and do come back and check out future podcasts from the factory at Bright & Associates, and do go to our website, www.brightandassociates.com.au, to check out our various training courses and also the career resources and services that we offer. Thanks for listening.
That was another factory podcast brought to you by Bright & Associates. www.brightandassociates.com.au